Wonderful. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Belinda Nicholson. I'm a PhD student at the University of Southern Queensland. My talk today is a little bit further out from where we've been hearing about. I study stars other than our sun. And I study young stars because there's a lot to learn about them. And we can learn stuff about our sun and our solar system by studying these young stars. So we know that the sun, when it was quite young, was very active. And we know from evidence from Mars that it once had a thick atmosphere, and that atmosphere is thought to have been blown away by the young sun. But if we want to understand more about what our young sun was like, we need to look at other stars, that are similar mass to our sun, but younger. And we want to see how they behave, what their spots are like, whether or not they've got flares, what their magnetic fields are doing, and also try and detect planets around these stars as a way of informing our understanding of planetary evolution. But what do I mean by young? Where exactly am I talking in terms of stellar evolution? The vague stages of the evolution of a star like our sun. So it starts off as there's gas in a stellar nebula. This gas collapses, forming a protostar, eventually forming a main sequence star where it spends most of its time, most of its life, before eventually becoming a red giant and a white dwarf at the end. I should stress that these stages at the start and end are very, very quick compared to the main sequence. But this young star stage can be split up into several stages. You have the gassy protostar, where you can't really see the star yet. It's too shrouded in gas and dust. It evolves a bit more. The gas and dust forms a disk. Eventually, it clears enough that you can see the star, but it's still accreting. There's a whole lot of matter falling onto the star. There's a lot of gas. And then eventually, you get to this stage here called the weak line T Tauri stage, where most of the gas is being cleared away, and you're left with being able to see the star in the center, and we can really observe it with this optically thin disk, debris disk around it. So at this stage, the Jovian planets have probably been formed, but it'll still be forming terrestrial planets. So this is the stage that I want to explore further. So how do I observe these stars? I use two techniques to get an understanding of how they behave. I use Doppler imaging and Zeeman Doppler imaging. Both of these techniques require high-resolution spectroscopy or spectropolarimetry. And we do use ground-based optical telescopes for this, usually about 4-meter class telescopes and above. So getting just normal intensity spectra, but also including a circular polarization measurement as well in the spectra. So first up, we have Doppler imaging. I should say first what we do when we have our spectroscopy, when we take our high-resolution spectra. In order to increase our signal-to-noise, we want to combine as many absorption lines that we see in that spectra into one mean line profile so we can increase our signal-to-noise. Now, as the star rotates and you see spot features on the star, these spot features will change the shape of your absorption line profile. So here we have our intensity spectra, our mean line, and as this cool spot on the surface of the star, as the star rotates around, we see this change in the shape of our profile. So in order to then sort of backtrack and then map the surface of this star, we take multiple observations as the star rotates. So this particular star, TWA9A, a 20-million-year-old star that's about the same size as the sun in mass, a little bit bigger, so it's not as evolved. And as it rotates, we take multiple observations, and you can see, even in this, that you've got the shape of the line changing. And then from that, we can reconstruct what the surface brightness looks like. And in this particular version, not only are we reconstructing cool, dark spots, but we're also reconstructing hot spots as well, hot, bright surface features. So that's what you see here. This is a big, hot, bright surface feature. And here is a region of cooler, darker features. Now, I should stress that this is a fairly low resolution that we can do with these stars. We can't really get the fine, small-scale structure that you can see on the Sun. So from the Sun, it would look fairly blank with this technique. So it's sort of just an average. And here, there's generally brighter areas in this region and generally darker areas in this region. But one of the exciting things that this allows us to do is it helps us to find planets by being able to characterize the surface brightness variations. Because surface brightness variations are very annoying for trying to detect planets, particularly with the radial velocity method, so detecting the wobble back and forth of a star. So, yeah, the surface brightness variations interfere with our ability to measure the radial velocity. But by being able to characterize just how that surface brightness variations change our radial velocity measurements, we're able to subtract them off. And that's what's happened here. So this, again, is TWA9A, the star I showed previously. The red points are the observations. The green points are the characterization of the way activity is altered, the radial velocities. And then we get these residuals here, which are relatively flat. So, yes, sadly for me, no planet around this star. But this technique has been shown to work. So my collaborator, Jean-François Donati et al., were able to find a nearly fairly large close-in planet around a 2-million-year-old star. So this is one of the youngest planets ever found in this really young stellar system, and really reduce the sort of noise that you get in the radial velocity due to the activity of the star. They're really able to beat that noise down and find this planet. So it's very exciting being able to get an idea of what these young planetary systems are doing. So next, on to Zeeman Doppler imaging. So this is what we use to map the large-scale magnetic fields of these stars, again, fairly low resolution. This little cartoon shows the polarization spectra. Again, this is sort of, we've taken a mean of all our lines, and then we've taken the amount of circular polarization above the intensity, overall intensity. And you can see, so this is the radial magnetic field. You've got a radial magnetic field spot coming across our line of sight as the star rotates, and you get this characteristic signature. And then with the azimuthal magnetic field, so radial, you've got magnetic field coming straight out, azimuthal, it's going around, and then the other component is meridional, which is sort of up and down like that. So they have different signatures that's characteristic of the type of magnetic field that they are. And again, by taking a whole lot of these, as the star rotates, we're able to reconstruct this large-scale surface magnetic field. So that's all very interesting here, the radial, azimuthal, and meridional magnetic fields. Now, it's very interesting for stellar astrophysicists because it's like, oh, what are these young stars doing? How is their dynamo behaving? What role has accretion played? But I'm not so interested in that personally. I think there's something else exciting that we can do with these magnetic field maps, and that is use them to model the young star space weather. So using them as input to a three-dimensional magnetohydrodynamic simulation. The one particularly that I will be using is called BATSARAS, which you've just heard about. This image here is from my paper released this year. This is a main sequence star called Tau Bootis. So this is just an idea of the type of simulations that we do. We really sort of strip back as many parameters as we can because we don't have as much information for these stars as we do for the Sun. So stripping it back, taking it back to the main basic MHD engine. But yes, so future work for this will be to apply this code to the young star and then see what sort of space weather we get in these young planetary systems. And then complementary to that, we can also try and measure the space weather. So taking X-ray observations and taking UV observations to get an idea of flaring on these stars to try and infer a CME rate, to then sort of infer what sort of environment are these young planets forming in, what will they be bombarded with. So in summary, studying young stars can help us understand the solar system, how it formed, and also, when we're looking for other planetary systems, understanding what sort of environment they're going to be in. We can use Doppler mapping not only to understand the activities of these young stars, but also help us to find young planets. Additionally, we can use Zeeman Doppler imaging to map the large-scale magnetic field, not only to help us understand stellar physics and to understand how these young stars work, dynamo models and such, but also to inform space weather models and infer what sort of, again, what sort of environment these young planets might be in. And then combining that also with X-ray observations to get a total view of young planetary space weather. Thank you.
Thanks for that, Belinda. Does anyone have any questions for Belinda?
I was just wondering, you were going to model the space weather, but young stars are surrounded by disks of gas and dust. Can you somehow put that in your code and model that as well?
So that's the advantage of doing weak line T-Tauris, is that there's no gas. A lot of the inner disk is gone. So the disk that will be there will be really quite far out. Debris disks, so you don't actually see the disk at all, except maybe in some infrared. But yeah, generally speaking, you don't, especially, well, in your optical observations, you don't see any presence of the disk.
Thank you, very interesting. So have you been able to get long enough stretches of data to be able to determine, for instance, the rotation axis of the star in 3D relative to the Earth, and then study the variations in sunspots over, you know, a number of rotations?
Not for these stars. There has been ongoing studies of star spot variations in some of the main sequence stars. So the Be Cool collaboration, they've been looking at, I mean, not young stars, but main sequence stars, looking at doing sort of long-term monitoring. The problem with a lot of this is that it's very intensive telescope time. I mean, those observations, that was 14 observations over 14 consecutive nights, and that is very, it's expensive. It's expensive telescope time, especially when it's a fairly niche area. There's one high-resolution spectropolarimeter in the southern hemisphere, and there are two in the northern hemisphere. So it's kind of tricky to get enough telescope time to really do, and to be able to map the spots, you need to have consecutive observations. So thankfully, through Be Cool, with Narval instrument on Telescope Bernoulli in France, yes, they've been able to have enough time to do multiple observations. In fact, if you look at the Tau Budis paper that I mentioned, a paper that sort of ties in with that by Matthew Mengel, he does a paper on an 8-year study of this star where for 8 years they went back twice a year to look at, it's probably less than, it was 8 observations over a number of years where they went back, would map it, and then a few years later come back and map it again. So there's lots of, it's a very well-studied star, so it's, yeah, there's a few things happening with that one.